paper 27, section 6, which is old single column, page 302. Okay. I know several people couldn't tune in last week, but right. So I won't say as you remember necessarily, but you know, if you look back to the previous section, it was the custodians of knowledge. Okay, and now we're going to do masters of philosophy and conductors of worship. You have this, these last three types of primary supernafim, which are putting the finishing touches on this long, long, long ascension scheme that you are trying to get going with here on this mortal sphere right now. And with the custodians of knowledge, you know, perhaps the thing to keep in mind, in contrast from what you might initially think when you hear that name, okay, obviously they must be something like the scholars on paradise from that name, right? But the contrast is, they're living scholars. You know, they're living custodians of knowledge. It's actually within them. They're not the dead cisterns of knowledge, like you hear me say so often. You know, that is by and large what a scholar is on our world. You know, they're the living custodians of knowledge. So it starts with, that's important to appreciate, because where you're going next with the Masters of Philosophy, to know that those that are going to hand you off to the Masters of Philosophy have given you this incredible living relationship with knowledge, right? It's not, so you aren't in some static state. You are very animated by them and ready to really do the final step in the other consecration. Okay, remember, you have two fundamental consecrations that you're starting to work on right now. Consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father. And you're during your ascension, you're trying to perfect those consecrations. Now, not necessarily complete, but perfect. And so perfecting that consecration of will, when did you achieve that perfection of consecration of will to the perfect will of God the Father? In order to get into the central universe, remember? You have to have perfection of purpose in order to get into the central universe. So you have the perfection that you're striving for that consecration before you got into the central universe. The Masters of Philosophy are going to help you perfect that other consecration. Perfecting your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Now, of course, in both these perfections, this is obviously relative to the finite age and everything, you know, but to the extent to which it's perfectible in the present age, you know, you're going to be perfected. Okay? The conductors of worship are, you know, what follows that culmination of your experiential process. Yeah? Perfecting your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, especially when focus on God the Mother, you know, the overarching facet of experiential deity, the Mother, Okay? I mean, it's obviously an experience. It's tied to experiential deity, what you're doing there. Okay? The conductors of worship, that's about satiating your relationship to existential deity. You know, you're satiating that desire to worship, your recognition of the fact, the now fully recognizable fact, once you're done with the Masters of Philosophy, fully recognizable fact of existential deity. And incredible, they tell you, an unbelievable desire to express what you recognize, this fullness of existential deity. So, see, it's not so much directly about this growth process of yourself, of your mindful self. It's once it's fully perfected by the Masters of Philosophy, now you've got to take care of this other issue of being able to fully express your worshipful desire. So the fact that you're reaching that apex of perfection, really, about that consecration of mind with these next group of primary supernafim, okay, what would that, you know, what are we doing there? If you're trying to perfect the consecration of your mind, you have a mindful self. You're trying to achieve perfect self-mastery. Okay? You're starting on self-mastery right now. You're finally going to perfectly master the self with the Masters of Philosophy. That's why they're called Masters of Philosophy. So at that point, when you're done with the Masters of Philosophy, now you have a very definitive parallel to a Creator Son as a descending son. You know, who, when he was, during his public ministry, what did they call Jesus?
Master.
The Master, right, our Master, right. Because he had, to the extent that a mortal can perfectly master their animal origin self, you know, he achieved perfect self-mastery of a mortal life. Therefore, he was appropriately called the Master. And then when he's done with his seventh bestowal, you know, in the greater universe, they called him a Master's Son, because now he's mastered the full experiential self process, all the way down to the bottom, like we're doing all the way to the top here. So that, you know, that's most fundamentally, see why they're called Masters of Philosophy. And it's of philosophy, right? It's not of science, it's not of religion. It's a philosophy, that pinnacle, the superadditive consequence of the relationship between goodness in the inner life and facts in the outer life. You just had the knowledge, you know, in its fullest possible extent with the previous primary supernafim. So you're ready now to achieve the fullness of philosophy. So let's just pause for a second. Now, what does the word philosophy mean? Because we need to understand that. We really appreciate what we're about to go into. If it's not obvious already, this section is densely packed. It's going to take us a while to unpack it. Conductors of Worship is not so densely packed. This is very densely packed because this is the peak. So in a few words, they're saying a lot of things. Okay, so philosophy. So it's, you know, you probably know it has Greek origins, that word. You have philos, which means loving. You have sophos, which means wise, or sophia, which means wisdom. You know, so you have philos, sophia. You know, so just simplistically, etymologically, it's loving wisdom. Okay. Now, when you take that Greek IA into English, it becomes that Y suffix. And the most precise way to think about it, about that Y suffix, is in the sense of it's making a noun that indicates a condition. Okay, specifically, what is this condition called philosophy? It's the intellectual condition of actively loving wisdom. Okay. We're trying to achieve a perfection of making your mindful self a personal, living, intellectual condition of actively loving wisdom. You have to be a personal living philosophy. They're trying to make you a personal living philosophy. It's not some external thing that you're going to read about. It's going to be you. You are going to be the philosophy, the mastered self, okay? A personal, living. Remember I told you to see where you had that living knowledge? Personal, living, intellectual condition of actively, you know, it's fundamentally dynamic. It's engaging truth, that fundamentally dynamic element, actively loving wisdom. Okay. Loving wisdom, not so much loving God. You've been loving God. In fact, you perfectly were loving God to get into Havona. And you're about to be able to fully express that desire, you know, to acknowledge that love. Okay. But to be a perfect you, you know, you is a self, a mindful self. Okay, so that's what this is about. And it's not just, you know, there. I mean, to now have revealed to you what your apex point is that you're striving for is to really take it all the way back and remind yourself very definitively about that twofoldness of your consecration. Consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, starting that right now. Okay. All right, so let's get into this and see what we see.
Six, Masters of Philosophy. Next to the supreme satisfaction of worship is the exhilaration of philosophy. Never do you climb so high or advance so far that there do not remain 1,000 mysteries which demand the employment of philosophy in an attempted solution.
Okay. So just, there's just a tiny little thing there. Okay, I mean, exhilaration. That should initially be a challenge, I would hope. Philosophy, you know, if you're first reading this, I mean, if you haven't been listening to me for a long time, especially, you're going, really? Like, that dusty stuff it's in some book, some old Greek guy, and you blow off the book. That's going to be exhilarating? No. See, like I said, you know, the personal living philosophy, you know, and understanding what that state of mind is, it's called philosophy.
Dust all over my camera here.
Right. It's, you know, so, you know, they're telling you that what you're striving for now should be exhilarating. If it's not, it's not philosophy. Something at best falsely called that. Look for something that will be exhilarating to you. Has some measure of truth of being philosophy. Okay, and you'll never climb so high, okay, where you won't require this. And notice that it's attempted, even on the Isle of Paradise. Demand the employment of philosophy in an attempted solution. That's a very another fundamental element of philosophy, that in order to really bring it into a state of certainty to any degree, you have to combine your philosophic state of mind with revelation, genuine revelation. You know, they teach you that, you know, in other parts of the book, that that's a fundamental, you know, indispensable pairing, philosophy and revelation. Well, so think about that. What does that imply? You're still going to be lacking in the full requisite revelation that you need on the Isle of Paradise. So not only, you know, will you never climb so high or advance so far that you won't be needing to be striving as a personal living philosophy, but you're always going to be, you know, looking forward to some further revelation that will allow you to put the two together, to really bring your top-up effort and that top-down effort together and make the full structure. So that's pretty revelatory, that even when you're on the Isle of Paradise, you're still lacking requisite revelation. Remember how we read about how you want to always be in a state of a question mark? That powers you all the way? You know, and that when you finally resolve some definitive question, then the challenge is having your eyes opened enough to see the next question to keep you going so that you don't just fixate and think, you know, and become static, you know? Because the moment that you become static, you are not really living anymore.
It's like the insecurity with security.
Right. See, so you can see it's, you know, that, and so that's, you know, get used to that. You know, forget about some, you know, mystical notion that you know, once you wake up in the next life, or maybe if you're a little bit bigger minded, you know, in some point when you're on the Isle of Paradise, you'll be fully revealed to, you know. No, never. All right.
Thank God. The 1,000 mysteries, right?
Oh, and maybe, you know, just, you know, just say that, I mean, just, I should probably stress that, and it just occurred to me. Revelation specifically is a word tied to truth. Disclosure, you have disclosure of facts. You have revelation of truth. That's the fundamental difference between those two words. Now, in the case like you talk about the fifth epical revelation, there are some facts that are disclosed in here, and when they're in the context of a revelation of truth, you might talk about them as being revealed facts. Okay, but specifically, when you talk about a revelation, like if you're talking about auto-revelation, or if you're talking about epical revelation, what you're really talking about is truth, trying to find truth, not fact. Fact is a corollary issue. You know, and just think about how misunderstood that is. I mean, throughout all of history, people have tended to think that if someone discloses a fact to them,
it must be true.
It's a revelation.
Yeah.
Well, then, of course, yeah. And then that becomes the definition of truth,
yeah.
You know, relative to fact,
yeah.
You know, is that, you know, when God gives you a fact, it's a truth. You know, or when a sacred book gives you a fact, it's a truth. No. Right. So, you know, keep that, you know, very clear in mind. And that, you know, fact to science, goodness to religion, truth to philosophy. So that's, we're also going to be having a masterly relationship in the wake of the Masters of Philosophy with truth. We'll finally have, you know, this perfect masterly relationship with truth that we've been seeking for so long. All right.
The master philosophers of paradise delight to lead the minds of its inhabitants, both native and ascendant, in the exhilarating pursuit of attempting to solve universe problems. These superaphic masters of philosophy are the wise men of heaven, the beings of wisdom who make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience in their efforts to master the unknown. With them, knowledge attains to truth and experience ascends to wisdom. On paradise, the ascendant personalities of space experience the heights of being. They have knowledge, they know the truth, they may philosophize, think the truth, they may even seek to encompass the concepts of the ultimate and attempt to grasp the techniques of the absolutes.
Okay, so let's digest that. Okay, so they start out, so they delight in helping you take this final step of perfection. Did we mention it's exhilarating?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
You know, they repeated it?
They repeated it.
Right? Exhilarating pursuit. You're trying to really stress that. It's what you're looking for. That's, you know, true philosophy. Okay, so, you know, they're the wise men of heaven, of course, just, you know, referring to that simple etymological sense of philosopher. the beings of wisdom, make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience. Just remember that. We'll come back to that later on here. That little turn of phrase there, they have truth of knowledge and facts of experience. Okay. Try to master the unknown. See how essential the unknown is to this process. If there's no unknown, there can't be philosophy. And so you're dead. You're not really living. So you have to have that unknown, like we were saying. Okay, so with them, knowledge attains to truth. See, that's what we're trying to really strike step with. And an experience ascends, see, to wisdom. This is really the peak of our ascension we're talking about here. The last step of your ascension is to make this final step from the fullness of paradise knowledge to that final super additive consequence and the top of your ascension, ascend to wisdom.
Yeah. So it's hard to imagine the kinds of problems, unless they're problems in just our relationship to it, I don't know.
So here's a simple.
You know,
I do. So let's take the coarsest example.
Teenagers.
What was that?
Teenagers.
No. the coarsest example of a problem that someone at the center of all things would be puzzling over.
Puzzling.
How on earth, they're thinking, can you actually slide the wall out between each of the super universes? There is a divide between the super universes that is mind-bogglingly insuperable, you know, even to the masters of philosophy. So, for instance, that's one of the things they're puzzling over. It's like, well, how exactly is this going to work? For instance, we know what happens when a being from the seventh super universe and a being from the first super universe meet each other in Havona. You know, and it's like they just came from an alternative universe totally. It's like there's no relationship whatsoever between them. Yeah. So, you know, think about that. At some point, if you're going to get the grand universe settled in light and life, you have to somehow actually pull those impenetrable walls out. You know, the hands of the master spirits and the supreme power directors that establish these impenetrable walls between the super universes. You have to bring that together as one. There's questions, obviously, that are way above our pay grade about that. You know, and then just everything that stems down from that. But that's the sort of the biggest problem that's just screaming at you from the super universe level. The fact that there's seven super universes, you know, and they are distinct at a very high level. I mean, do you remember when we talked about the master spirits? Do they have just supreme personality activity? No, they also have ultimate personality activity. I mean, there's a sevenfold division, you know, that's beginning to be established out in the outer space levels even. You know, that's a reflection of their hand of divide. You have a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity there. How are you going to bring that together?
You're not the only one doing that, obviously.
No. But think about how big that problem is. It requires every single being in the grand universe to solve that problem, because we only achieve that state together as one. See, so it's a problem that'll be there until the very last step. Okay, and then, you know, just go down to a smaller problem. You got the Melchizedeks. They set up two colleges, you know, in our constellation. That's why they stick a DEK at the end of our constellation name instead of just having it end in TIA, because of those two special Melchizedek colleges in our constellation. Because there's inscrutable problems that no one in advance knows the answers to, related to the fact that there was the Lucifer Rebellion, all right, in our system, and Michael chose this for his seventh bestowal. And everyone is going, well, okay, that's interesting. So throw out all the manuals. Now what? You know, it's nothing but problems once he does that. Everything becomes a problem the moment he made that decision. You know, when he made that decision, it didn't dot all the I's and cross all the T's. It just erased the whole thing. He changed every law. You know, and they've got to rework everything. So, it's, yeah, It's the problems high and low. Okay, so let's see. And then, okay, so you see, personalities of space experience. See? You know, this relationship to the experiential. The heights of being. Okay? That's where we're going to reach the heights, like I said. And then they're giving you that step. See, they have knowledge, because of the previous primary servant of him. They know truth. And now they're going to take one even further step. They may philosophize. So we talked about what the word philosophy means. What does the noun, what does the verb mean? What does the verb to philosophize mean? No human has ever been able to figure it out. We've been trying to figure it out for 2,600 years. We now have it revealed to us. We now know what that word points to in the cosmos. We have the word, but we've never been able to figure out what it points to. It means something called to think the truth. Something that mankind has very little experience with. So now think about how Jesus gave you the first two steps. And this is the third step. And these steps are the three levels that we initially have a relationship to, the fourth, fifth, and sixth levels of meaning, because of the first, second, and third cosmic intuitions. Okay? And why did the heathen rage? Why did heathen rage? Because they know not the truth. In other words, they have no relationship, really, except for what they don't appreciate and utilize, with the fourth level of meaning, the first cosmic intuition. They're basically down in the lower domain of the hourglass. Now, why do the heathen? Why did he use that word heathen? The heath. What is the heath? The heath is the wastelands of a geographic location. You know, so the people, you know, that are consigned to the wastelands, you know, scratch out of life. Those are the heathen, confined to the heath. Okay, why do those that are in the wastelands rage? The lower domain of the hourglass, the wastelands. Why is it the wastelands? Because it's that mindal energy relative to you is waste. It is thrown away when you die. It's mortal. It has no survival value. It's waste. It's the heath. And if you live down there, you rage because you know not the truth. You don't have your first foothold in the fourth level of meaning. Okay? And then he points to each of you. A very definitive finger. Why do you languish in futile yearning? Because you obey not the truth. Rugged. That's a rugged truth passage in the book. Looks right at you and says, why do you languish in futile yearning? Because you obey not the truth. Okay? What are those levels called, those cosmic levels? First one is causation. You know not the truth. Duty. You obey not the truth. You complete it. Do you think the truth? You know the truth, obey the truth, and now you're wholehearted. You think the truth. To think the truth, you have to be wholehearted. You have to have the full relationship up in the upper domain of the hourglass, the fourth, fifth, and sixth levels of meaning. That's what they're revealing. To be wholehearted requires the encompassment of personality, personal, living, philosophy. If you are wholehearted like that, you're really living, as the revelators describe it. Okay? Personal, living. You are a personal living philosophy. You are an upper domain of the hourglass. You're encompassed. You know the truth. You obey the truth. And you now think the truth. Okay? When you're engaging the fifth epical revelation, and you're reading a paragraph, and you begin to recognize that there's a lot more there than immediate words. What are you doing? Are you using your imagination? No, well, you need to make sure you aren't. You might be actually thinking the truth. It's what you're trying to do. To find the truth of the fifth epical revelation, you have to go beyond knowing the truth, obeying the truth. You have to get the whole bit. You have to be able to think the truth to find the revelation of truth and to follow it wherever it may lead. Okay? So, again, you're learning about what you should be up to now by seeing the endpoint that it's striving towards. If you're really living now, it's striving towards that, that is. If you're in the wastelands, it's not striving for anything. It's waste. It's all thrown away when you die. Okay? You're heathen. Okay. So, it's rugged truths, but very helpful, you know, to really appreciate, to not set your sights short here, to know what you're striving for. I want to be able to think the truth, not just think facts. I got to figure out how to think truth. And I can only do that after I've discovered and know it, and then I've begun to live it, obey it. Okay. You know, so if your life consists mainly of regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future, if that's what you use your spiritual consciousness for, like essentially 100% of the spiritually conscious people on the planet use it for, regretting the past, whining over the present, and vainly hoping for the future, you obey not the truth. So forget about, you know, if you think that you think the truth, you know, if you think you should call yourself a truth seeker, okay, and you aren't holistic like this where you know, obey, and think the truth. If you call yourself a truth seeker, celestial beings have a name for that. What is it? Deluded. You are deluded. Okay? By and large, you have people with they've kind of discovered they have a sixth adjutant. And there's this word truth that's floating around. It's drifted down from the cosmos. Like, oh, that's a cool word. I'm going to label my forehead with that. I'm going to call myself a truth seeker. No. That's delusion. It's sad to record that so few persons on your ranch take delight in cultivating, philosophizing, thinking the truth.
I should take that off my Facebook page.
Well, no, you shouldn't take it off. You should swallow hard and know what it means to say that. Yeah. Don't be delusional about it anymore. Be sober about it. And if someone says, why do you call yourself a truth seeker? You say, well, because I'm trying to do something that is next to impossible. I'm trying to go beyond what almost every human that's ever lived has done. I'm trying to be able to philosophize. I'm going to try to be able to think the truth, to think it, see, to follow it, to strike step with it. Is it your feelings that lead you Godward? No. It's your thoughts that lead you Godward. You know? And here we are at the pinnacle of thought, the pinnacle of philosophy. Okay? It has led us Godward. In the wake of this, we are finally at God, and we can worship. Okay? That thinking has finally led us right to the doorstep. Okay, and we're there. All right, let's see, what else is there? Yes, to philosophize, to think the truth. And then see, they may even seek to encompass personal living philosophy. You know, can you make that capacity big enough so that when your personality encompasses it, what it's encompassing is beginning to go beyond supremacy? Can you start to encompass concepts of the ultimate and grasp the techniques of the absolutes? With the help of this fifth epical revelation, you can actually start doing that right now. You don't have to wait to get to the masters of philosophy. You can really get going with that right now if you start to think the truth through the revelation.
At the southern extremity of the vast paradise domain, the masters of philosophy conduct elaborate courses in the 70 functional divisions of wisdom. Here they discourse upon the plans and purposes of infinity and seek to coordinate the experiences and to compose the knowledge of all who have access to their wisdom. They have developed a highly specialized attitude toward various universe problems, but their final conclusions are always in uniform agreement.
Okay, now that this one's super dense. Okay, let's start with Chris last time asked me when we were reading about the custodians of knowledge. I can't even remember where that was. But you remember how they mentioned, here it is. At the northern extremity of the isle, there are available the living finders of knowledge, it said. And Chris was wondering, why the northern extremity? Okay. Well, and I said, wait until next time. We'll pick that up. So this is why. Now they tell us that the masters of philosophy are at the southern extremity. So what's up with this? Why are the custodians of knowledge at the extreme north end and the masters of philosophy at the extreme south end? Okay, do you remember when we were doing the Isle of Paradise? You remember they talked some about the north-south differential. Now, they were talking about it, though, on Nether Paradise, that they were talking about that north-south differential. Here, you know, we're on Upper Paradise, and we're seeing this north-south differential as being something very significant again. What exactly is it? Well, when you're talking about Nether Paradise and that north-south differential, they're talking about, you know, on Nether Paradise, you're talking about what stems from space potency. And they were saying that what stems from space potency flows, quote-unquote, sort of out from the northern extremity and comes back in the southern extremity. That there was this universal circulation that the isle drives. I mean, you don't really want to use drives. It results from this differential on the isle. Okay? Out the north, in at the south. Okay. So, but that's space potency. What stems from space potency? Well, there's two other potencies that we don't talk about very much. There's mind potency and spirit potency. Yeah, it's a threefold energy system. It's not just the material, the physical, tied to, you know, stemming from the space potency. It's also mind potency and space potency. Okay. On the personal surface, the upper surface, okay, you have what stems from mind potency and space potency. I mean, and spirit potency, mind potency and spirit potency. Okay, with this differential again. Okay, so the northern one they said was the custodians of knowledge. Okay, what does the word knowledge mean? It means knowingness that can be given. The ledge part is given and outward. In order to engage the outward phenomenon that is the giving of knowingness, knowledge, you have to be at the northern extremity. The Isle of Paradise is this existential domain. That's where it goes out. That's where knowledge is given, on the northern extremity. And you're talking about what stems from mind potency and spirit potency. Okay. So, if it's coming in, see, think about it. The masters of philosophy are on the southern extremity. What are we trying to do? We're trying to bring that all in to our inner life. Our mindal self. We need, in order to complete the mastering of ourself, the perfection of our mindal self, we have to be at the point on the isle where it comes in to our inner life. That's why you're there. And that's why the masters of philosophy are there. That's where it's in. Knowledge on the other end is where it's out. Okay. So they don't have to, because patterns are patterns, to give you how it works for space potency. You then know how it works for mind potency and spirit potency. It's the beauty of the threefold actuality. They're one reality. You know, they're encompassed as one reality. So if you figure out what's going on with one, you can extend it to the other two. Okay, so that's why the southern extremity. We're finally in the one place in the universe of universes where it can perfectly come in and finish this process of your ascension. Okay, so there's that. That was just the first few words. So they conduct elaborate courses. You know, when you're dealing, even now, if you begin to actually deal with philosophy, there has to be a precision. There's a lot of detail. Elaborate courses in 70 functional divisions of wisdom. Why are there 70 functional divisions of wisdom? Just basically. Okay. Because it's, you know, you have science, philosophy, religion, you know, on the chart here. Individuality, associativity, unity. Okay. The associativity, okay, there's a 70-fold associativity, fundamental associativity in the universe of universes, because there's a 7-fold individuation of spirit unity on the one end, and there's a 10-fold to individuality on the other end. So how many fold associativity do you have between 7 and 10? You have 70. Okay, that you have a fundamental 70-fold associativity that you're engaging. So there's 70 functional divisions of wisdom. Remember, with the knowledge, they said there were 7 fundamental. Because, again, as I was saying, one of the biggest problems that they're trying to deal with is that 7-fold individuation of spirit unity. The fact that it's individuated like that, I mean, it's like, well, okay, there's the knowledge in this one and the knowledge in this one. And everyone's going, how exactly do you get those to come together? They are really fundamentally 7. There's this fundamental 7-fold division, see, that has to somehow be overcome. All right, even on the Isle of Paradise, you can't overcome that. You got to learn it in 7 divisions, see. So here they discourse upon the plans and purposes of infinity, capital I infinity. Those of you who know total deity a little bit, what does, it's not the infinity, it's just infinity, capital I. So what does that word mean, capital I infinity? The functioning of deity on the infinite level. Okay. So in other words, everything is in play, just like it was when we were doing total deity. We're trying to bring it all into play, all the way up to the functioning of deity on the infinite level. Not just, down on the finite. We took it all the way up. Okay? The finite, the supreme, the absolute, the ultimate, the co-absolute, the co-infinite, and the infinite. The whole works. So, plans and purposes of the functioning of deity on the infinite level and seek to coordinate, mother word, the experiences. All right, so like I said, they're trying to help us with that final step of a consecration of our minds to the universal harmony of God the Mother. As a matter of fact, remember how, notice in the first sentence of the second paragraph, the masters of philosophy, the master philosophers of paradise delight to lead the minds of its inhabitants, not the wills or the personalities, the minds. This is a consecration of the mind to the universal. It's about the self, fundamentally. Okay, so it's going to take coordination. It's about that experiential component. We're going to deal, once we got the experiential component perfected, then we're going to deal with that hunger relative to existential deity, with the conductors of worship. Okay, so they coordinate the experience and compose the knowledge. They have developed a highly specialized attitude towards various universe problems. And then this is a really, really important thing, the second, in terms of your life right now. And perhaps even add 5 more reallys about your relationship to the fifth epical revelation, about how important it is. But their final conclusions are always in uniform agreement. Always in uniform agreement. Many people who read the fifth epical revelation, read the book, Perhaps I should say. Remember, you know, a famous passage in the Jesus Papers where they're talking about unity and uniformity. Those, you know, those who've been around readers for a long time know how oft that's invoked. Unity, not uniformity. Like for instance, when it says, well, okay, if you want to go to it, it's single column, it's 1732. It's in paper 155, section 6. It's like what? It's, you know, it's about halfway through that section. Let's not dwell on it, but it's there in section 6, I said. It says, for instance, one of the lines is, the religion of the Spirit does not demand uniformity of intellectual views, only unity of spirit feeling. Okay. Now, if you overdo that, if you take that out of context, and make that, if you absolutize that with the absolute dimension of your personality and turn it into an ism, you immediately have just spread falsehood throughout your whole relationship with the revelation. Okay? You're not going to get anything correct after that. It's extremely important. You know, what specifically it says, the religion of the Spirit, the religion. Okay? Okay. Does not demand uniformity of intellectual views, only unity of spirit feeling. But my feelings don't lead me Godward. My thoughts lead me Godward. So, and this is about religion, not philosophy. This is about initiating you. You know, and this is the fourth epical revelation about initiating you, you know, in relationship to existential deity, the initiator, the Father. Okay? Yeah, that just requires engaging the unity domain of values, ideals, okay? And if a group of people do, they are what we call kindred spirits. But they're not kindred minds. They're merely kindred spirits. They're a potential now. Especially a potential in the sense of being part of a brotherhood of man down the road someplace. The brotherhood of man cannot be achieved via merely kindred spirits. That's just a potential for the brotherhood of man, the kindred spirit state. You've been potentialized by the potentializer, the Father. You've been initiated. Okay? The brotherhood of man is kindred minds. It is a collection of personal living philosophies. Those are the men. They are the collect. Well, see, but you know, just one step at a time. I mean, obviously, we have absolutely unique personality. But you know, these primary supernovim have absolutely unique personalities, and yet their final conclusions are always in uniform agreement. This is the challenge, you know. If you absolutize that statement about unity, not uniformity, that's called studying the ideas of the God of Liberty. That's called a rebellion. Studying the ideas of God the Sevenfold is. The sevenfold is the staircase that's leading you Godward. Your thoughts lead you Godward. Okay? You know, if you absolutize the starting point, collapse the hierarchy, make it an anarchy, a plane, like Lucifer told you you could do, see, that's the problem. So it's a very, very important issue. It's the crux, you know, it's the decision point. Because of what Michael did, we all now have enough spiritual consciousness to join the rebellion. And this is how you join it. by absolutizing the first step, that first bit of unity consciousness saying, that's it, I'm at the end. Fine. No. If you think the beginning is the end, guess what? You really are at the end. Now, you will get your wish. You will be waste. And you will be thrown away. Right? You'll be nothing but mortal. You'll have no survival value. You have to be an upward moving phenomenon.
Wasn't the thought behind that when he was talking to people about that was really to try and make them realize that, you know, they don't have to have a creedal religion, so to speak, that they all are in it together with in order to experience a personal relationship with God, so to speak.
Yes, you got right. See, that's the little nugget of validity. But see, it has a strong tendency to not stop there. I mean, when you hear a reader, you know, bumper stickerizing that line, declaring unity, not uniformity, that's the battle cry of the rebellion, self-assertion. See, you find this excuse for self-assertion that you have the right to not cooperatively subordinate yourself to the Paradise Trinity. No one has that right. Not even the Father has that right. That was the first thing the Father did.
But didn't he say the unity that they all experience is the unity to do God's will? I think that's what he went on to say.
Right. See, you see what I'm saying? It's you have to carefully keep it just in the domain of religion, which means it's not in the domain that leads you Godward. It's just in the domain that gets you to see God. It's the I am state. It's the beginning state. It's the existential establishment state. One must do something as well as be something. See, that's another way of understanding this. Okay, what you're striving for, the brotherhood of man is a state on the planet of kindred minds, where every single person is on the same page. In terms of, how did they word it there? Intellectual view. So it's like, well, how could that be? How could you ever be on the same page of your intellectual view if everyone has an absolutely unique personality? See, that's beginning to distinguish. If you start to reflect on that, or if you recognize, I can't resolve that, that's because there's no separation between personality and self yet in your understanding. You've got them stuck together. The thing is, everyone needs to get on the page. There's only one reality, and everyone has to encompass it in their mind. It's uniform, spot on, precisely, exactly the same, the reality that you take a hold of.
Because
there's only one reality. Then the question is about personality, about will. How are you going to purpose that? See, that's the glory that is personality, is that everyone can grab a hold of the one reality and purpose it absolutely uniquely. But the rub is you can't do anything of the sort except delusionally until you first grab a hold of reality. When you don't actually have a hold of reality and you purpose, it inexorably leads to oblivion.
Accepting God's all merciful, unless you're doing it. If you're doing it out of night,
He's infinitely merciful, but you're finite.
Right, but
so you run out.
Naivete, in other words, if you don't.
No. Right. You don't go to oblivion by naivete. No, of course not. But see, it starts out unwittingly. It always starts out unwittingly. But there's a dynamic here. You know, like we've pointed out, that's the pathology of Lucifer, to study the pathology of that individual. How he starts out unwittingly, but it doesn't stay unwittingly very long. That's the rub. You've taken hold of something that takes you somewhere, and if you assume that it only takes you to good places, you are wrong. Spirit substance, if you actually grab a hold of spirit substance, it can now take you to the two places, everything and nothing. Yeah. Now there's a question on that, I think, that Katie had from the web.
Comment. Mm-hmm. From Barbara, the one best and right way.
Yeah. Right. There's one best and right way. Yeah.
And then I had a comment.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that you keep your compass pointed the right direction?
We're told that we have this incredible gift within that is described as a cosmic compass. I mean, it validates direction. Obviously, you know, to do something, it's about direction. Being something is place-like. So, yeah, you see, and that's, again, to once you recognize that, it's like, oh, so I must not be using some existentialness of the adjuster. No, you'll never touch the existential core of the adjuster. It's untouchable by an experiential being. You know, a purely virgin adjuster is just an existential fragment. But the moment that it's individuated, it begins to wrap experiential nature around it. You know, and even a virgin adjuster, when a, you know, so-called quote-unquote virgin adjuster that's sent out to say to primitive mortals, has an initial measure of encasement of experiential nature, because only that experiential nature can relate to an experiential being that they're going to dwell in. I mean, existential and experiential in pure form are like this; they don't meet. Well, experiential has to mean experiential. So, all right, see, it's that experiential divinity that's wrapped around the adjuster that can be really helpful for you, the experiential being, who would like to know, what does it look like when it's perfectly directed? What does a masterly self look like? Now, give me an example of self-mastery, Lord. He did. Put it in your mind, not above your mind, where it's hard to see. He put it literally right before your eyes in your mind so you can see it.
That's the compass.
That's the cosmic compass. That's the father fragment. That's the adjuster.
And that's the right? Trick to see it.
It's a little, right, it's a measure of the universal harmony. You know, we're trying to consecrate our mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. It's like, well, what does that look like? Look at the nugget of it that's right in front of you if you're up in the upper domain of the hourglass, if you know the truth, obey the truth, and then think the truth. If you do all, if you've risen all the way up, you might actually be able to begin to see that nugget of universal harmony. You won't see it in a communicative, you know, first circular way initially, but you'll begin to have this catalyst of, I think I know. Is that right? Yeah, it is. It feels right. You'll get this solidity feeling in your mind because of the adjuster. When you actually mold some universal harmony in your mind, he validates it for you. That's it, that's it. He silently whispers, okay? You'll get this reality response. You know,
but it doesn't work in terms of, well, should I go turn left here?
Right, because those are temporal
issues. Use a GPS.
All right. Right. See, and just again, see that if you set your sights low, if that's what a compass means to you, is a GPS to get to the soccer game. You know not the truth.
Well, you still got to live.
Right. Right. You,
Jesus was very practical about living.
In right. To see, this is what, but we're separating. Especially in this life, you prefer to serve two masters. You must take care of those things, but you also must begin to take care of higher things. I mean, Jesus, you know, he wasn't so heavenly minded, he was no earthly good. Hourglass is not a dichotomy. Okay? He took care of all the practical things of life, knowing full well that all that energy that he put into all that would die and not be resurrected. It has no survival value because it's all about what you do down in the lower domain of the hourglass. It has no survival value. But he did it anyway because he knew it was the right thing to do. Okay. Right. You got to do those things. Okay, but he also knew that if there was going to be something to fuse with his Michael spirit substance, you know, at the baptism, he had to supply the favorable conditions to grow a soul. Well, or, I always say it that way to see if I can get the response, oh, supply the favorable conditions to allow a soul to be grown. Man cannot cause growth. Right? He puts himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, the source of the mother that grows. He supplies the favorable conditions with his will, and then she grows his soul. Yeah, it is, right. Yeah, that's a consecration of the will. And now we're just getting that other aspect, see, of, the full favorable conditions are both the consecration of the will and the consecration of the mind. What your personality does when it engages the self, not just when it reaches to the Father. See, it does two things. It reaches and it encompasses the mind. So you want it to supply the favorable conditions. Linkage, religion, religion, tied back, right? So it does that part, right? But it also is this encompasser. Okay. Was there something?
No,
okay. All right. So that, like I said, there's a lot that ought to be unpacked here to appreciate, how that statement is challenging some absolutizing of that passage up there in the Jesus papers, which is ripe to be. I mean, it's why it was so easy for Lucifer to seduce, countless angels and whatnot. It's easy to miss this point, to think that unity, yeah, that's it, that's all, and liberty, that's a unity word. That's why he's called the God of liberty. I'm everything that your spirit consciousness has ever wanted to hear. And he just sucked them all in like a vacuum cleaner, okay? I mean, it was just such an enticing spiritual candy, such a sophistry for him to speak those words of unity. See, forget about that uniformity crap and all of the trillions of years it takes to achieve it. That's oppressors forcing you into that.
Foreign potentates.
Yeah, foreign potentates and whatnot. Just be the unity that you are. You're innately divine. Okay, et cetera.
What could he possibly have hoped to gain? I don't get the...
He thought he was going to gain everything. Yeah. Absolute liberty.
Yeah.
Instead, he gained absolute bondage.
How stupid could he be? He's a pretty high...
Well, see, that's the other thing. He wasn't stupid. I mean, he is so smart, you can't even imagine how smart he is. He's so beyond any of us in this room imagining how smart he is. He's insanely smart.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Insanely smart. See? Oh, he's so smart, he could become cosmically insane.
Oh, I see. He was insane.
He was ignorant, not stupid.
And yet, when he was offered forgiveness...
Right, but that's because
he got to a point where he was jailed. And he was
well, I mean, he's gone past that. I mean, he'd gone public a long time ago. I mean, remember they talk about that. He starts out unwittingly. It's just evil that's forming in. It's just ungoodness that's forming in his mind. It's just evil. But there reaches a point where he recognizes, because he's connected to the cosmic intuitions, and one day he goes, "Oh crap. That's not right. But I already went public, and I'm a coward. So now I'm going to double down. Now it goes to sin. And now it goes from self-disrupting evil to self-destroying sin. See, the moment that you change it to sin, you're on a very difficult path to turn around because you're starting to...
Can't be my way, then I don't even want to exist anymore.
See, but you see, you reach the point where you can't think clearly because sin is self-destroying. It literally, the first sin you make destroys part of yourself, a self that's given an initial integrity to know what's right and wrong. You begin to tear that apart the moment you sin. It's self-destroying. And so that you cross this threshold where... It doesn't matter how much it's in his face. He cannot see it anymore. He's destroyed his ability. He's destroyed his insights. He's destroyed his ability to recognize. And then you take it that final step. Iniquity is self-destruction when it's totally gone. You've just totally destroyed the integrity of your God-given self. You're iniquitous. See, so that's why you say, how could he not? Because he's destroyed the ability to see it anymore. He can't see it anymore. He's cosmically insane.
Yeah, real damage, literal damage.
Right. Self-confusing, self-disrupting, self-destroying, self-destruction. Error, evil, sin, iniquity.
He also had no compass.
What was that?
He also had
You see, I mean, that's
part of the carnage.
Right, right. That, you know, that.
What is something we
had no compass, has no adjuster.
Got trouble in the engine room.
Right. You know, and none of those material sons and daughters or seraphim or cherubim or, you know, or Marantia companions or what, you know, none of them had adjusters either. You know, they are very dependent upon their supervisors, their leaders.
Right.
You know, their lemmings.
The 100 have to leave their adjusters behind, or did they have?
No, the 100 didn't have adjusters. Right. And so
they did at one point.
They they did. They left them behind when they left Gerizim. Right. Right. And so there, you know, I've pointed this out. Think about this, how important it is to have consecrated your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother.
Yeah.
If you've done that to a significant degree, you have integrity, you know, independent of an adjuster. The Most Highs selected 10 of the 100 to be in the 10th commission. Because they got their calipers out and they measured the ones that had the greatest consecration of mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, and they put them in that commission so that they were integrous. That if there was a rebellion, they would not rebel. They knew they were sophistry proof because they measured them in advance. The rest of them, yeah. No, they were too small. Yeah, and it, you know, and it got tested, and yeah, a lot of them failed because they were too small. They didn't have cosmic integrity. So again, that's another way to look at what we're doing here with the Masters of Philosophy. We're putting the finishing touches of perfection on that cosmic integrity.
Everything you hear about is about freedom and liberty. I mean, that's like,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of like one of the watchwords of our country.
Right, and it and it's
and there's two meanings to it, I'm sure.
True and false liberty. Of all problems that have resulted from the Lucifer Rebellion, you know, none is God's greater problems than the ability to distinguish between true and false liberty. Yeah, because liberty is one of the most powerful, in many senses, you know, in, when you're thinking of, you know, things like government and collective sort of thing, it's the most powerful word. Spirit word. It's a spirit word. It's a crazy powerful spirit word, liberty.
Which is unity.
So, which means it's crazy dangerous word. Very dangerous word to take on if you're ignorant. Lucifer is ignorant. He took it on, killed him. Very dangerous word.
Isn't this last sentence somewhat, though, about divergence and convergence, even though it is emphasizing their conclusions are always in uniform agreement, that the but there would almost imply that their highly specialized attitude is very divergent in how they're reasoning and going through logic to actually get to those uniform conclusions.
Yeah, I mean, that's the absolute uniqueness of their personality, you know, which, in, you know, again, we're up at the state where that's totally liberty. Remember, we talked about that. That's the whole point of being on paradise here. Finally, the full absolute dimension of your personality is free to exercise. So, yeah, that absolute unique personality is fully liberated and fully in play. So you got this group of masters of philosophy, fully liberated personalities. But when they objectively, you know, engage it from their absolute unique directions, it all converges to one reality. Clear vision all leads to one uniform reality. Their final conclusions. So it's another test. It's like, well, I think I'm using my personality, and he thinks he's using his personality. I can see that initially we're starting in very different places and going at it in very different tacks. Let's see if we actually are using our personalities, or is this just delusional self-assertion? If it's personality and it's rightly consecrated, it will meet at one point. Because that's the whole point of personality, is to link two things to have true relationship. See, you can only have true relationship. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Through the individuality, there's one way to connect two persons, two beings together. Okay, you have to come to the point, the node in that is reality. There's one reality that you meet at, you know, and there is an individuality of the whole reality through her. Okay, let's get a little more here.
These paradise philosophers teach by every possible method of instruction, including the higher graph technique of Havona and certain paradise methods of communicating information. All of these higher techniques of imparting knowledge and conveying ideas are utterly beyond the comprehension capacity of even the most highly developed human mind. 1 hour's instruction on paradise would be the equivalent of 10,000 years of the word memory methods of Urantia. You cannot grasp such communication techniques, and there is simply nothing in mortal experience with which they may be compared, nothing to which they can be likened.
Okay, so when they were, do you remember when back in the tertiary Supernafim, and, you know, they brought up the Havona graph method there, you know, and they did attempt to actually give us some crude analogy anyway there. I mean, we played with that a little bit. You know, they related it to the baud rate, you know, back in the beginning of the 20th century, you know, and the rate at which you can communicate symbols. You know, and they're talking about those living newspapers, remember that was in that, you know? And we worked through that, and we got these amazing numbers about, you know, even if we make the symbol that's being communicated at a certain, you know, at this incredible rate, just a single bit, where all you're communicating for a symbol is on or off, is a binary digit, you know, you still end up with this phenomenal transmission rate from our perspective. Okay, see, you know, they're pointing out, okay, first of all, in that analogy, they used 1,000 years. Here they took it up an order of magnitude, 10,000 years. And they said, and we can't even give you an analogy where you can kind of be awed by the analogy, because we're bringing in paradise techniques here now too. Yeah. And so, you know, they're trying to point out you just can't even imagine what kind of an incoming you're going to be experiencing at the southern extremity of the aisle here. What is the amount that's going to be coming in, just how much it's going to take to perfect you. How many things have to come in yet? Even when you've made it through all of this ascension and you get to the aisle, there's still an amount that has to go into your inner life that is beyond your wildest imaginations to take you from one, you know, nanometer from perfection to perfection. Like I told you, that curve that you started climbing when you left the third circle of Havona is really, really steep. Okay? It's just going stick vertical at this point, okay? The amount that has to come in to make that last little notch to reach the apex, you know, to have this supremacy of perfection.
You know what's interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, you can sort of try and imagine that, that you're still you.
And you're still you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That the same you that's sitting here now will one day be a you that can step into the inflow on paradise and take it in. Have the capacity to not be blown apart by that. Yeah.
Paradise-sized firehouse.
Right.
Can't imagine what the form looks like.
A great deal of that is not like any gesture, is it not? If we had no
gesture. In this, a lot of the integrity, the fact that you don't rupture, is the adjuster. But the volume, the capacity, is because of your consecration to the source of capacity. It's not the Father. Father divested himself of all capacity. you know, before time. He's the infinite capacity is not one of the facets of his deity. It's separate. You know, capacity comes down through the mother. Mother has given you capacity. The mother grows you. So you have this phenomenal capacity. That's why he kept saying coordinate scenes. I mean, they're helping you to be grown by the mother to this final supreme capacity that just can have the full thing dumped in. All right. Keep going. Okay.
The masters of philosophy take supreme pleasure in imparting their interpretation of the universe of universes to those beings who have ascended from the worlds of space. And while philosophy can never be as settled in its conclusions as the facts of knowledge and the truths of experience, yet when you have listened to these primary Supernifim discourse upon the unsolved problems of eternity and the performances of the absolutes, you will feel a certain and lasting satisfaction concerning these unmastered questions.
Okay, so see the unsolved problems of eternity and the performances of the absolutes, that's may even seek to encompass the concepts of the ultimate and attempt to grasp the techniques of the absolutes, see. That kind of stuff, you know, will fit into your capacity now in amazing ways, like we were just describing. You know, remember, like I was just describing, there's this definitive relationship to supremacy that you have at this point. That when you fill that capacity, it's going to give you a pretty darn certain complete-like feeling, okay? You know, like they're describing here. You will feel a certain and lasting satisfaction. You just don't even remotely have some notion of, you know, I think we missed a little region of filling up. You will feel full, and you won't be able to imagine how there could be more room made for filling. Because to go beyond that, you got to go to the next universe age. You got to have absolute, you know, literal consciousness and stuff. So, yeah. So it'll be very certain and lasting. This is what you have, the kind of fullness that you'll feel.
So by the time we get there, you know, 2/3 of the universe will have gotten it. These guys will have taught a lot of people.
Well, speak for yourself. No. I'm thinking about seven eights. I'm thinking about seven eights in my case. But
right.
Yeah.
So we figured out
Orvantin
was slower than the rest of the super universe.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
The point is that they'll have taught a lot of people, yeah. These guys, who then will have gone out and they've joined the Corps and everything like that, and so on and so forth. So I'm just saying that, you know, these problems here, especially if they're problems that are all in the evolving universe part, some of them are going to be, they're going to have more insight to, I would imagine, over time.
You can also argue it the other way.
More difficult.
Right, yeah, you can argue about
it.
Change. Some things, yeah, will...
There's going to be changes to some degree. Or
but every time some things are kind of brought, problems are resolved, that, you know, opens the door to even bigger problems. And right, and so, you know, there's this curious relationship between, say, Grand Fanda, you know, and... you know, those last people that are coming into the Isle of Paradise.
Non-grand
fandom. Yeah, the ones that we, well, you know, there's those that love to call the last one Omega Man. Exactly how that works. I mean, what is the interplay between, you know, it's like the relationship between, the people that we know that have fused. You know, like say, telling us that Enoch, you know, actually fused, that's not just a fairy tale in the Bible. Okay, and you're thinking, well, okay, so he got all the way, not only the first circular, but to fusion way back then. And, it's, you know, there's one of the immediate things you can recognize there is the Supreme has grown a lot since then. So the challenge is all the greater for people in this room than it was for Enoch. You have to strike step with a bigger Supreme. Than Enoch had to. And then there's, you know, probably 50 other things, you know, issues that come into play. But there's at least that. So that issue of having to strike step with a much bigger Supreme by the time you get to paradise than what Grand Fanda had to. Yeah, so anyway, yeah. Points of reflection. Another point of reflection in there. Did you? I told you to kind of hold it in your mind. Did you notice that they did something very interesting here? So back there, what, three paragraphs back, they used the phrase facts of experience. Well, bless you. They did truth of knowledge and facts of experience. And now they're saying facts of knowledge and truths of experience. They flipped them, the facts and the truth. First you had truth of knowledge, now you have facts of knowledge. First you had facts of experience, now you have truths of experience. Spend some time reflecting on that. Why did they flip them? What? It'll help you to distinguish fact and truth. And if you reflect on that some. I'll give you some clues here. Okay, so it said that with these masters of philosophy, with them, So these superaphic masters of philosophy are the wise men of heaven, the beings of wisdom who make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience. So they make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience. So that's what's input. Truths of knowledge and facts of experience. And then down here, and while philosophy can never be as settled as it's in its conclusions as the facts of knowledge and the truths of experience. So they're using those first two, and they're saying that you're never going to be as settled. So think about why isn't the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience settled, but the facts of knowledge and the truths of experience are settled? Spend some time reflecting on that.
Come on, you know. I know it's a decent.
Well, but it's no, not.
I'm teasing.
You know, it
wouldn't be any fun if we didn't.
Well, I mean, and it would be of no use for me to fill the air. I mean, how many words have I already filled the air with here tonight?
Not a typo. That's not the answer.
Yeah, right, it's not a typo. Okay. So, all right. So that's the at home assignment there to reflect on the contrast between those two. All right.
These intellectual pursuits of paradise are not broadcast. The philosophy of perfection is available only to those who are personally present. The encircling creations know of these teachings only from those who have passed through this experience and who have subsequently carried this wisdom out to the universes of space.
Okay, so that final statement, think about how that wraps it up. Okay, and we are going to do conductors of worship here too, so you know, we still have plenty of time. So the intellectual pursuits of paradise are not broadcast. That should seem a lot more immediately understandable because are we at the northern extremity?
No.
Southern.
We're at the incoming, not the outgoing. Yeah. So that matches up.
Yeah.
Okay. And and again, to appreciate, to broadcast something is to put it out in the outer life.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not talking about outer life. We're talking about the inner life. Right? Okay, and so, and to get this, you have to be personally present. Right? To be made, and to make yourself, because there's a consecration of will here, a personal living philosophy. So you have to be personally present to become a personal living philosophy. Okay, to become, let's expand that word philosophy out again, to become a personal, living, can you remember intellectual, you remember what's the Y suffix on philosophy means a condition, it's a personal, living, intellectual condition of actively loving wisdom. Okay, You aren't, you know, so they've completed the process with you. You're a perfect expression of it. Your inner life embodies, you know, a personal, living, intellectual condition of actively loving wisdom. Okay? See, and the encircling creations know of these teachings only from those who have passed through this experience and who have subsequently carried this wisdom out to the universes of space in their inner lives. Okay? You go out as a personal living philosophy, as a personal living intellectual condition of actively loving wisdom. All right. You think the truth. Okay, so that's, you know, I wanted to really stretch that out because it's, yeah, this is a philosophic text. It's not a disclosure of fact. It's a revelation of truth. It's about philosophy, not science, not religion. It's about truth. It's about philosophy. And it's all about philosophy. You know, it's not the masters of science or the masters of religion that put the finishing touch on you about as an experiential fact, as an experiential self. So, but now it's done. The finishing touch has been put on. You are a perfected experiential self. Now what? Well, now for the first time, you can satiate that desire that you have to express your thanks to existential deity. The conductors of worship are going to teach you how to use this self that you now finally are to beam that worship at existential deity. You now have the capacity to worship in full and to actually satiate that desire.
Yeah. Right.
So let's read this. You know, the conductors of worship section is much more straightforward, because even now, if you've begun to consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father, you've begun to have this craving. You know, much more than the craving that was described as an exhilaration relative to philosophy. You know. It's not, but that's not a surprise. Step one comes before step two. So, of course, you know step one more than step two. You know the first consecration. So they can kind of just give you some poetic prose to excite you about how what you've begun to crave will be satiated one day.
Seven conductors of worship. Worship is the highest privilege and the first duty of all created intelligences. Worship is the conscious and joyous act of recognizing and acknowledging the truth and fact of the intimate and personal relationships of the creators with their creatures. The quality of worship is determined by the depth of creature perception, and as the knowledge of the infinite character of the gods progresses, the act of worship becomes increasingly all-encompassing until it eventually attains the glory of the highest experiential delight and the most exquisite pleasure known to created beings. While the Isle of Paradise contains certain places of worship, it is more nearly one vast sanctuary of divine service. Worship is the first and dominant passion of all who climb to its blissful shores. The spontaneous
ebullition
of the beings who have learned enough of God to attain his presence. I'm sorry, my glasses are doing something funny here. Who have learned enough of God to attain his presence. Circle by circle, during the inward journey through Havona, worship is a growing passion until on paradise it becomes necessary to direct and otherwise control its expression.
Okay, so just pause a little bit there to make sure we appreciate the fullness. You're going to see the word spontaneous, you know, I've pointed out several times. Remember, you know, what the literal meaning, what the way the revelators use that word. It means of free will, literally. Okay, they're going to be reminding you, now have, you know, that free will has all of the means necessary now because of this perfected mind all self. The masters of philosophy have seen you two. So that you can let a rip of free will. You know, and it's an ebullition. It boils out. Right? It's just going to boil out of you. You know, because the lid has been finally taken out. You're finally, you know, you have this liberty of personality existentially on the aisle. And because of what you've done to yourself, that liberty can be translated into a freedom now of self. And so it can get out now. There's no, the lid has been taken off and it just boils out now. Okay. You know, and that, like, you know, we're all, you know, looking forward to it. This becomes necessary to direct and otherwise control its expression. This is something that is this huge, you know, as big as you, you know, you just, we just described how big you were, how much capacity you had to be able to be standing there at the southern extremity of the aisle and having the input that's there. So if that much input can be expressed out now, so it needs some control.
And that is the expression worship.
Yeah, and worship at this point still is vague. We're gonna remind ourselves of a little bit more precision here in a second, so that we know what's going on here.
The periodic, spontaneous group and other special outbursts of supreme adoration and spiritual praise enjoyed on Paradise are conducted under the leadership of a special corps of primary Supernafim. Under the direction of these conductors of worship, such homage achieves the creature goal of supreme pleasure and attains the heights of the perfection of sublime self-expression and personal enjoyment. All primary Supernafim crave to be conductors of worship, and all ascendant beings would enjoy forever remaining in the attitude of worship, did not the chiefs of assignment periodically disperse these assemblages. But no ascendant being is ever required to enter upon the assignments of eternal service until he has attained full satisfaction in worship.
Okay, so there's a number of things there. I mean, there's the fire hoses, like we always describe. The fire hoses come out. Try to tap down the fire a little bit here. And, you know, remember, you know, who's, we talked a lot about how, about the chiefs of assignment and how, remember, of all of them, we're going to love to have the relationship with them, you know, in our off hours the most. And, you know, so look at that interesting contrast there. So you won't feel put upon, because you feel a closeness to them that you don't feel to others. It's kind of a neat little harmony that it's them that step in. You know, that last bit there, but no ascended being is ever required to enter upon the assignments of eternal service until, you know, so you're satiated, supremely satiated. See, so this, you know, you can, that just really shows you the difference between what we're doing in the previous primary Supernafim and here. I'm a perfect, perfected self now, but I have this issue. I've got something bottled up inside of me that I've got to get out before I can, you know, set my sights on an eternity of service here. Okay, just give me a moment here to get something out of me that's been bottling up for a very long time. You know, so they're not really taking you up. They're just teaching you how to use what you now are. Obviously that, you know, that adds to you, but it's kind of almost the beginnings of more of a completing thing than a perfecting thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, see, they're adding here.
Well, I don't know, Jesus or something you said. that the first 8 years of your life do have an effect for mm-hmm. your entire career. Mm-hmm. And what you were just talking about mm-hmm. is something you just didn't quite
right.
overcome. Whenever it's sort of in there, and it's just always been in there.
All right, so this is building up, and it's like, oh, by the way, did we use the word spontaneous? The periodic spontaneous, like, you know, they just keep reminding you that everything in this domain of existential sequence can only happen in one way, you know, purely as a volitional phenomenon. Okay, so it's always of free will.
It's an odd,
yep.
It's kind of an odd choice of words in the sense that when we think of satiation, it means having taken in to the point where we can't hold anymore. We've mm-hmm. used up our capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Here, this is worship. This is an outpouring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're still using the term satiated.
Mm-hmm. In the sense of something needs to flow through you that hasn't been able to flow through you yet. So, I mean, it's a capacity. You're using the word satiated or satisfaction. Full, you know, it's how they say full satisfaction, see? You know, because it's this capacity thing. You just didn't have the capacity to have that flow go through you before. And you want to experience a state where you couldn't slip another... You know, little sliver in there. You know, you want it full, like satiate. You know, or you just couldn't eat one more bite of turkey. You'll blow up. I mean, that kind of thing. You want to feel. You want it to feel just, you know, stretched to the limits, full. This flow through you, right to the center of the Isle of Paradise.
Yeah. That's why you'd want to stay there forever.
Yeah. But the conductors of worship are going to help you, so you don't actually, you don't literally have to stand there forever. Let's see, I think there was maybe some other, let's see. Just to note that all primary Supernafim crave to be conductors of worship. We haven't really brought that up, but wrap your mind around that. Don't forget about, you know, we're talking about beings that are the children of the third source and center. That whole mind thing, that whole adaptability thing. Think about the adaptability and the capacity of these beings. I mean, you know, they can be masters of philosophy, you know, for a while, and they can be conductors of worship, you know, custodians of knowledge. I mean, they have that kind of adaptability. You can be this incredible master of philosophy and something else still. You know, in their vastness of capacity, they still have this amazing flexibility that they can reform that capacity to a different state.
Fresh my memory, who creates them?
The Infinite Spirit. So, Infinite Spirit capacity is probably not an issue. So that's just, they just slip that in here at the end, you know. Initially kind of thinking they're all made, you know, they're just made masters of philosophy. It's like, no, they actually, you know, there's an amazing diversity here, flexibility.
It is the task of the conductors of worship so to teach the ascendant creatures how to worship that they may be enabled to gain this satisfaction of self-expression and at the same time be able to give attention to the essential activities of the paradise regime. Without improvement in the technique of worship, it would require hundreds of years for the average mortal who reaches paradise to give full and satisfactory expression to his emotions of intelligent appreciation and ascendant gratitude. The conductors of worship open up new and hitherto unknown avenues of expression so that these wonderful children of the womb of space and the travail of time are enabled to gain the full satisfactions of worship in much less time.
Okay, so let's deal with that factual issue there first. Okay, you know, we remind ourselves of this frequently. Let's do it again. Okay, so when you're talking about a paradise of on a millennium, right? Remember we've talked about that. You know, a day is 1,000 of our years, 100 days in a year, So that's 100,000. Then you take 1,000 of those years, you have 100 million of our years for a millennium. So when they say hundreds of years, okay, you know, it would normally take tens of millions of years. With this kind of a huge capacity, if they didn't teach you. So, you really have some emoting. Remember, I used that word emotion? I mean, talk about having some motion that you want to put out. That unless, even when you're perfected, unless they told you exactly how to use what you are, it would still take you tens of millions of years of output.
I find this interesting that this first sentence where they talk about how to worship at the same time.
Yeah, I was just going to get to that. That's the real significant element there. Okay, so let's understand that. See, the only way to understand that first part is to remember, what they best taught you up in the Jesus papers about prayer and worship. Okay? In their true sense, not in their simplistic, evolutionary sense. These are conductors of worship. If I don't know what worship is, if I think worship is some fancy incense ritual in a cathedral, I'm waking off base here. There's nothing to do with that. Okay? What is worship? And you also need to know what is prayer, because that's at the same time, that's the other side. Okay, so remember up there in the Jesus papers, they tell you that prayer is self-reminding. Okay? Sublime thinking. Worship is self-forgetting, super thinking. Okay, so worship is self-forgetting, super thinking. Okay, so we talked about, with those earlier primary supernatum, just how much you have to be precisely on, keeping track of yourself, and how it's engaging all this incredible complexity on the aisle. Okay, you can't do what we often have to do now, where in order to really be fully in a worship state, I have to turn my back on myself and be just fully self-forgetting. We have to treat them kind of like a dichotomy to a degree, because we're so limited right now. But see, they're saying, you need to be self-forgetting in order to worship. That's still true. But at the same time, you have to be self-reminding at the same level. It's like, well, how can I do both at the same time? Well, they're going to teach you how to do that, how to be both self-reminding and self-forgetting at the same time. Because you have to be in that contemplative prayer, from the temple looking to the self. If we visualize, here's the temple within, and I look to my left to my animal origin self. And that's the prayerful, the contemplative. I'm in with the temple, contemplative prayer state. I'm self-reminding. I'm looking to the self.
What do you mean you're in like a worshipful state while you're going about your?
It means that you have eyes in the back of your head. They teach you how to have eyes in the back of your head, so that you can be fully focused on the cosmos. Well, and the cosmos is, a nugget right in front of you now, the center of the Isle of Paradise and the deities, the thing that you're wanting to reach out to. So you can be fully focused on that at the same time that you're really still focused, behind yourself and keeping track of all the details. Because you can't step on someone else one iota while you are trying to pour everything right at the Father. If you forget one nugget of one individual, paradise evaporates. I mean, it's just it's an impossibility. You can't. And so, in order to fully do this, see, you want to be fully engaged and say, well, in order to be fully engaged that way, you have to also be fully engaged this way at the same time, back to everything else. They have to teach you how to do that.
I pray that my worship doesn't stop me from praying.
and the one other addition about that definition, that very, you know, inscrutable initially. I mean, if you're coming from, you know, evolutionary religion and you're reading the Jesus papers and it tells you worship is super thinking, you're like, what? No, I thought worship was, you know, waving my arms and singing or something like this. I thought that was worship. No, it's super thinking. It's above thinking, in a basic sense. It's transcendent thinking, you know, like the transcendental domain is, you know, super finite, you know, things like that, okay? It's super thinking. It's your thoughts. It's your feelings that lead you Godward. You've perfected the thinker, you know, the mindful self with the masters of philosophy. Now you're going to do something above that. See? Super thinking. You know, you've all the time you've been doing true worship, the worship has always been built upon how much you have consecrated your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. If you haven't done any of that, you're delusional if you actually think you're worshiping in the sense that the revelators think of the word worship. Okay? It's always predicated on the consecrated mind, true worship. Causation, duty, worship. I mean, it's a pinnacle thing. Okay? So here you have now this perfected mind, so you can fully worship, fully be in a super thinking mode, directed out. Okay, but at the same time, you're sublimely thinking about this perfected self too, and its relationship to a countless number of beings. Because like we're about to read, you know, you get the whole of paradise involved in this. How many beings are on the Isle of Paradise in one time? And you got to be in track of every one of them. Okay? You know, because remember, you don't have to just keep track of the five that are crowding around you. I mean, by will, you can be anywhere on the Isle of Paradise. The whole thing is in play. Okay? It's huge. See what we're talking about here. Okay? You have to have, you're trying to express to the infinity of God and be in intimate recognition and relationship to an almost infinite number of beings at the same time.
Individuals.
Yeah, as individuals. Everyone's absolutely unique, and everyone, there's a different protocol with every single one of them. And
individual.
Right.
It's just infallible.
Right, it's unfathomable what we're talking about here. Is it? It's just crazy what we're talking about here. All right. Right, but you'll actually be able to do, you'll have the capacity. You know, that's what the conductors of worship, you know, guess what kind of capacity you have to do now? No, that's not possible. I can't do that. Yes, you can. Let me show you what you can do with the kind of capacity that's grown in you now because of what those masters of philosophy did to you. All right. Let's see. Right, so they, you know, and see, and it's just that super thinking mode. See, it's an unknown avenues. It's above even what you have after the masters of philosophy. See, it all fits if you just think about it precisely what the revelators say the definition of worship is.
All the arts of all the beings of the entire universe, which are capable of intensifying and exalting the abilities of self-expression and the conveyance of appreciation, are employed to their highest capacity in the worship of the paradise deities. Worship is the highest joy of paradise existence. It is the refreshing play of paradise. What play does for your jaded minds on earth, worship will do for your perfected souls on paradise. The mode of worship on paradise is utterly beyond mortal comprehension. But the spirit of it you can begin to appreciate even down here on Urantia, for the spirits of the gods even now indwell you, hover over you, and inspire you to true worship.
See, inspire you to true worship. I mean, you have the sixth level of meaning right now. It's obviously, in relativity terms, it's very small compared to this. But You know, in truth, it's identical. You know, fact, it's almost infinitely different. But in truth, it's identical. So you can, if you strive, get up to the sixth level of meaning, you know, and begin to think the truth, and you will have a recognition of a super thinking in your consciousness that is now appropriately called worship and not delusion. you know, as they keep employed in their highest capacity, you can see how they're just, you know, trying to refer it, you know, remind you of the literalness of what's going on here. And you know, when I read Jaded Minds, you know, certainly one of the phrases that I early on felt a resonance with is there's no rest for the weary. Yeah. The wicked or the weary. But that weary part is what always stuck with me. There's no rest for the weary in this life, it seems. You know, jaded, weary. No, there is. There is a final rest for the weary. And it's happening right here. You know, so to be able to, you know, to look to that at least and, you know, and try to bring a little measure of that into my life now. Bring the truth of that into my life now and not be so fatalistic, you know, like we have such a tendency to be on our benighted sphere. There is rest for the weary. Don't you know, lose hope. You know, and the fact that we're in this definitive spirit mode, you know, joy. The highest joy. Joy is a purely spirit word. And you're finally going to be able to do that, experience that joy feeling to its fullest. All right.
There are appointed times and places for worship on paradise, but these are not adequate to accommodate the ever-increasing overflow of the spiritual emotions of the growing intelligence and expanding divinity recognition of the brilliant beings of experiential ascension to the eternal isle.
Stay between the lines. No. It's not going to happen.
Never since the times of Gran Fonda have the Supernafim been able fully to accommodate the spirit of worship on paradise. Always is there an excess of worshipfulness as gauged by the preparation, therefore. And this is because personalities of inherent perfection never can fully appreciate the tremendous reactions of the spiritual emotions of beings who have slowly and laboriously made their way upward to paradise glory from the depths of the spiritual darkness of the lower worlds of time and space. When such angels and mortals of time attain the presence of the powers of paradise, there occurs the expression of the accumulated emotions of the ages, a spectacle astounding to the angels of paradise and productive of the supreme joy of divine satisfaction in the paradise deities.
Okay, a couple little things there. You know, this whole bit about, you know, never since the times of Grand Fanta, you know, always is there an excess of worshipfulness as gauged by the preparation, therefore. Okay, what problems? There's a problem. No matter how much they think about it and try to plan for it, they always fall short. It's an ongoing problem. It has been since the days of Grand Fanta.
Because they can't experience it.
Because they just can't wrap their minds around what it's like to start on a mortal world and get all the way to paradise. They were born on paradise. And a lot of it's like, well, what's the big deal? you know, there's a measure of that. Yeah. You know, they're obviously, you know, you can tell that they're getting better. I mean, in relationship with ascended mortals, they're starting to grok it. But mortals are always a notch ahead of them, you know, because of this evolution thing like we were talking about before. It's like, okay, got it all figured out, you know, and then some mortals evolve through a now bigger supreme and get to paradise and cause a bigger problem. So they wrap their minds around that, and then the supreme gets bigger, and some bigger mortals come and cause a bigger problem, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And of course, it's geometric.
Well, are these preparations things like we need more sandwiches or lemonade? What are you
talking about here? I'm preparing. Popcorn, get your popcorn.
Are you bringing up chairs to the auditorium? What is it?
Is that the spirit of
catering this thing? It actually is the lemonade because we've learned how to make lemonade out of lemons. Experience where they had to do that. So I think you got that one nailed.
Well, you know, it's going to be difficult. You know, you can begin to speculate, but you know, appreciate that there's no way to we're going to be able to really get your hands on this problem because we have no idea what the heck the issues are in a domain of existential sequence. You know, it has something to do with that. I mean, that you remember, you know, you can't change the sequence there. It's an unchanging, unchangeable sequence there. It's not like experiential sequence. It's existential sequence. And they have to figure out where in the infinity of pre-existent existential sequence all of these new beings fit when they go into a worshipful mode. It's in there. It's somewhere in the infinity of the existential, you know, pre-existent state there. They have to discover and adapt. See, so it's a good thing that they have a lot of that adaptability thing because they've got to do it, you know, right in the moment. They have to discover a whole new aspect of the existential domain that they were born into that they didn't know was there. Oh, they go here, they go here, you know, they're trying to arrange this, you know, in the moment.
And they can't drug them.
Yeah, there's no stopping it. You know, and it's a good thing that the masters of philosophy are constantly working on this because each time, you know, relative to previous times, the problem is even greater than it was before. They have to make even huger discoveries of unknown existential sequence, you know, unrecognized place on the aisle. right. So. Well, they don't get that. That's a mystery. They don't explain what the, you know,
because they all create logistics.
Yeah,
and anybody that does this job fails at it. That's interesting.
Well,
sounds like the government.
But no, they don't fail.
It's not
they're caught off guard. So I was just saying, you know, they pre-plan a bunch of things, and that takes care of basically all of the past experiential potential. You know, but they have to deal with the new stuff in the moment because it's spontaneous. It's of free will. It can't be calculated in advance. They have to engage it in the moment, and it's dynamic, you know, beyond our imagination. So they have to be so fluid to be going with this fluctuating phenomenon to strike step with it and coordinate it so that it fits into paradise. It has to fit into paradise. Paradise won't change to allow it. It has to be fit into paradise. See? you know, and fit into places they didn't know were there. See, and again, what the heck does that mean? See, again, you know, we don't know.
They don't fail. they succeed in being an
addict. Okay, I mean, another thing there too. You know, remember from where we are now, the difference between a world. Where everything went splendidly, you know, not even a hint of rebellion or fall or anything. The difference between that world and our world is zero from this relative perspective now. All worlds, independent of that, are described how? The depths of spiritual darkness. Okay? They're not just talking about rebellion spirit. They're talking about every sphere. Okay, relative to the Isle of Paradise, it's jet black on those mortal worlds, okay? So, you know, remind yourself of that. There's a great truth there. Like, oh, if only I was on one of those great worlds. Why did I have to be born on this one? Whining over the present. Regretting the past. And vainly hoping for the future. Okay? No. Okay? It's irrelevant, okay? The difference is negligible. You're supposed to start out in darkness. Suck it up. All right.
Well put. Well, I'll put
Again, you know, remember, you know, that's the way the revelators talk to us. It's like rugged truth. Remember when they said, okay, and then there's all of your issues, you know, blah, blah. Remember how they just like flippantly reject all, you know, you die and whatever, you know? I mean, at times they get really flippant about the things that are like everything for us, you know? Because from that high vantage point, it is nothing. It is so trivial. Okay. So it's just like, people, take a bigger, get a bigger picture. See how little this is. Don't turn molehills into mountains. All right.
Sometimes all paradise becomes engulfed in a dominating tide of spiritual and worshipful expression. Often the conductors of worship cannot control such phenomena until the appearance of the threefold fluctuation of the light of deity abode, signifying that the divine heart of the gods has been fully and completely satisfied by the sincere worship of the residents of paradise, the perfect citizens of glory, and the ascendant creatures of time. What a triumph of technique! What a fruition of the eternal plan and purpose of the gods that the intelligent love of the creature child should give full satisfaction to the infinite love of the Creator Father.
And you say, how is that possible? It's only possible because of the supremacy that's in play. See, until you can go literally beyond the finite, only the supreme can jump over everything. That measure of supremacy can jump over like that and satisfy. You know, it's like when they tell you the absolute dimension of your personality. Well, technically, it's just a supreme dimension. Okay. So that difference is no difference at all, as you're seeing here. It fully satisfies infinite deity. And this, you know, becomes engulfed in a dominating tide. You know, the conductors cannot control. Okay, that's why in the previous paragraph, they described them as the presence of the powers of paradise. See, not the persons of paradise. See, so again, see this super thinking mode you're in. I mean, you're in order to give that to them, you have to take a hold of them, the power of them, and so it just takes over this power phenomenon on the aisle that they have to try to somehow regulate. It's a power thing, you know, more than it's a personality thing. See, and that's why they use that description. Okay, so there it is, you know, exclamation point. And even though it's getting late, we do have an important little bit more to do here. I'm sorry this went a little late, but that's really, you know, that's the end of the story in terms of the primary supernafin by and large. And then they have a little post, you know, epilogue here, I guess you'd say, that does have a very intriguing little tidbit in it.
After the attainment of the supreme satisfaction of the fullness of worship, you are qualified for admission to the core of the finality. The ascendant career is well nigh finished, and the seventh jubilee prepares for celebration. The first jubilee marked the mortal agreement with the thought adjuster when the purpose to survive was sealed. The second was the awakening in the Marantia life. The third was the fusion with the thought adjuster. The fourth was the awakening in Havona. The fifth celebrated the finding of the Universal Father. And the sixth jubilee was the occasion of the paradise awakening from the final transit slumber of time. The seventh jubilee marks entrance into the mortal finality core and the beginning of the eternity service. The attainment of the seventh stage of spirit realization by a finaliter will probably signalize the celebration of the first of the jubilees of eternity.
So you have these seven jubilees of time. See? And we mentioned them before that 2 through 7 are pretty straightforward. They're three pairs. You just have these pairs of, you know, waking up in the Marantia life and fusing, waking up in Havona and finding the Father, and waking up on the aisle and being inducted into the core of the finality. So it's pretty straightforward. The tricky one is number one there. So let's just quickly take a moment here. When you're thinking of a person pre-Pentecost who didn't get an adjuster at roughly age six, you know, just because their parents had an adjuster. Number one is, you know, is a pretty straightforward thing. You have those prerequisites of adjuster indwelling. You have this effort that this individual has gone through to supply the favorable conditions, to be grown to the point where an adjuster can come into relationship with them. First Jubilee. Okay, so that's easy to understand. But what about, you know, what about those people before Pentecost that got an adjuster at age six? You know, and everyone now that gets an adjuster at age six, how do you understand the first Jubilee? What marks the first Jubilee for us now? Okay, and that's where you have to carefully look at how they word that so that you understand specifically what's in common between the two, between that person who got the adjuster as an adult and you now. First Jubilee is marked by the mortal agreement, okay? So you have to know what the word agreement literally means, okay? Agree, favorable, meant, conditions. Favorable conditions. Okay, so it marks, and it's during the mortal life still, it's a mortal agreement, favorable conditions in the mortal life, okay, when the purpose to survive was sealed. Okay, was confirmed. Okay, well, the way that works, if you get an adjuster at age six, the way that's this purpose to survive is sealed. The way someone, you know, observing it gets a confirmation is when you become an independent ascender, or at least an independent potential ascender. You have to be separated mindily from your parents, or you're not an independent ascender yet. And the purpose for you to survive is not sealed. You're still attached to your parents until about age 16. Okay? You know, and personality, which is absolutely unique, is slowly working and it's slowly separating until finally it's separate and it seals off as a separate mindful self. You're not really a separate mindful self until about age 16, they tell you. And if you go to the first mansion word, you basically won't find anyone there younger than 16 because, by and large, you don't separate mindful energy system from mindful energy system from your parents until then, your biologic parents. Okay? So, see, that's when it's sealed. That's when you get this confirmation. Okay? It's all about, see, it's still about the same thing, supplying favorable conditions. The favorable condition for you to ascend is you're separate. Okay, so that's the first Jubilee. You know, when Michael changed these spirit laws, you know, that are in play, you know, so you have to reinterpret, you know, that first one in the wake of Pentecost. Okay, so that's what that is. All right.
And thus ends the story of the Paradise Supernifim, the highest order of all the ministering spirits, those beings who, as a universal class, ever attend you from the world of your origin until you are finally bidden farewell by the conductors of worship as you take the Trinity oath of eternity and are mustered into the mortal core of the finality. The endless service of the Paradise Trinity is about to begin. And now the finaliter is face-to-face with the challenge of God, the ultimate.
It starts all over again.
Presented by a perfecter of wisdom from Universa.
Right. It starts all over again, yes. But, you know, in the second, you know, you start the second phase of your finite career. But, you know, as you know, I'm going to emphasize. Now, look at the parting, you know, emphasis there. You take the Trinity oath. Endless service of the Paradise Trinity. What you've achieved and this self-mastery, you know, the whole ascension is about self-mastery, and you finally have perfect self-mastery. What fundamentally, in the full cosmological sense, is self-mastery? It's cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. The Paradise Father obviously is a mastered self. He had to have done this to be a mastered self. Yeah, the Father before time began is an existential fact, is in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. That's what it's all about. In order for there to be something besides the I Am, you know, or a theoretical God the Infinite, this is how it happens. Everything on bended knee in cooperative is a free will, cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, the one facet of deity that directly engages the totality of reality. Everything else has to put itself under in cooperative subordination. Yeah? And when you put yourself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, you do so by anchoring yourself on the Paradise Isle. You're putting yourself between the two plates, Paradise Trinity and the Paradise Isle. You anchor yourself on the aisle below, and you know, you put yourself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity above. That's the whole point of everything that's going on. In one way or another, it all boils down to that bottom line. That's why it's the bottom line of this whole ascension scheme that's coming to a culmination here. It'll be the bottom line of the completion of your second phase that you're starting all over again with. It'll be the bottom line forever and always. It's always the bottom line. A new dimension of cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity.
That's what each of these jubilees is.
Another milestone in that process. Coming into greater cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. I mean, that is you know, the distinctly unique fact that's flowing through the fifth epical revelation. I mean, where has that ever been thought before in human history? That's really what it's all about, is cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. It is non-existent. If for no other reason, no one has actually really understood the Paradise Trinity as a fourth fact and all these other details, and you know, the fact that it's a consecration of mind that does it, you know, fundamentally, and all these issues. See, so to just let that sink in, you know, and just completely transform your relationship to the fifth epical revelation, that's what you're looking for, you know. And you'll easily see it once you're looking for it, because you go, I love the Jesus paper. So you start paper 120, and you notice that all they talk about in those first two papers is cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, that's what it's all about, that's what that story is all about. It's all in here. I mean, that's where that expression literally is coming from. You know, where they literally say cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. See, so that is this, you know, is the distinct thing that they're trying to teach us in the fifth epical revelation, to consecrate yourself to that goal, and how it will help you with the humility thing, that having just that consecration of will idea doesn't self-regulate. With just the will thing, you can go to self-righteousness. If you know it's fundamentally not about your will, but about, you know, it is my will to be cooperative subordination, see? Right. So, yeah, just reflect on that. And then don't forget about your at-home assignment about thinking about this. Because I'm stressing it, because that's actually a fun thing to just take those two.
Minister down here on earth?
The chief of seraphim on our world is a primary supernovim.
That's a lot of fun.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Here it's getting late. We better wrap it up. So let's just take a moment here to reflect on that.